So welcome everybody. This is your last conference call for all the advanced learning events. So David and Peter, woohoo! They just have to do your RLAs and then your get that management certificate. So that's awesome. Congratulations. Yay! And both of you guys have done your first RLA, so that means you only have one left to do for this. So that's so exciting. So this is our second conference call for BF103, reporting, or BF, our best friend, reporting, sometimes a little stressful at that time. I'd like to acknowledge I'm hosting the call from the traditional territory of the Kwanlin Dun First Nation and Ton Kwachin Council. And so last week on our call, we looked at some of the different types of reports that you can be asked to prepare when you're working in recreation or volunteering in recreation. And as you might recall, we talked about reports are written for different reasons, for different audiences. We looked at some of those and can be presented in different formats, so not always in a written format. And I really believe that reports are supposed to tell a story. And a good report is organized just like a good story. So it's been a long time since I went to university or did high school, but I kind of vaguely remember from English that stories are supposed to follow a flow. They don't always, but they should follow a flow for beginning with an introduction, having some action, and then some sort of ending or conclusion. So if you think of a report as being a story, there are common elements, and there should be a flow to the report that you're providing too, especially if you want people to read them and engage with them. So this week on our conference call, we're going to explore the flow and common elements or major sections of reports that you might happen to be preparing. So I'm going to ask you guys, I don't think you need to introduce yourselves. I think you all know each other. And Deanne, just let us know in the chat if you can talk or can't talk, up to you, whatever works for you. And David still popped out. So Peter, we're going to start with you. What I'd like you to do, and I'll pop this into the chat so that you can read my question, is just, well, we all know you're Peter, so we know you're in Whitehorse and you're at work at RFA. So maybe you can just tell me, if you write reports, like at work, do you use a template that's provided by a funder or your supervisor, or do you create an outline for each report that you write?
Well, I guess mine would probably be less of a report, but like compiling data in a way that is easy to read. And I kind of took a couple templates and adapted it to make it a bit more clear, or add a bit more clear data. So I wouldn't say I use a template per se, but I kind of took some information from what I saw other people do previously and then made it my own. But yeah, I use Excel.
Awesome. And you can also take from this, like you're working with the real leaders who are providing reports. So think of what you need. Like think of this two ways, right? So what reports you have to provide, but also what report, you know, the structure or the flow or what's meaningful for you to get as far as in a report. So when you're looking at, you know, how you collect reporting information from other people, does it make sense? Does it have a flow to it? Is it what you really need, right? Does it tell the story? Because, you know, sometimes stories are hard to tell, like if, right? So, you know, do we get the story out of what you're getting?
I do find like the, like we have like a reporting tool for the people that participate in the program, and they give you a picture of like the objective data, but it is hard to kind of see the subjective like actual impact kind of. Like you're like, okay, I know X amount of people came, I know this went for this long. I have like a, maybe they might have a barrier or two that they had to face. But it is, you kind of do miss that subjective piece, and that's why we kind of try to do the visits so that we can actually see the program. Because when you do see the program, like you're like, oh wow, this is having a really big impact, or this is like a modest impact, or whatever.
That's great. Well, keep that in mind and then, you know, build, see if there's something you can take away from this about questions that you might want to ask when you're doing visits or things like that. So that's great. Thank you. So, Deanne, I'm not sure if you can pop in the chat if you usually write reports based on a template that's provided to you or if you create an outline for the report that you write. So I'll let you pop that in the chat. And David, I see that you're muted and no camera, so I'm guessing that you're not available to... Oh, there you are! Pop back in! So sometimes, Deanne, I can't hear you, David, sorry. I love those Bluetooth headphones that just disconnect on you sometimes. I can see your mouth moving, but I can't hear what you're saying. So I run a laptop and a screen and my Bluetooth headphones, and I simply don't use them because it seems to bump me around on all sorts of speakers and microphones and stuff. It's frustrating. Can't hear you. Okay, you keep working on that, and we'll keep rolling along, and I'll come back to you. You may need to disconnect and reconnect. So Deanne said sometimes on templates and sometimes PowerPoint, and PowerPoint is an awesome way to report because it helps us share the reporting. I like PowerPoint more for my own self rather than for the people that I'm sharing it with. So good point. Thanks for that, Deanne. So if you are on the slides or you have the slides open in front of you, or I can probably try and share my screen, but I still don't have my great internet. Slide 22, so that's where we're starting. It shows you that there's two common ways of organizing a report, and I'm sure that you can all think of reports that you've had to organize, and yeah, it takes way more time to create your own outline for a report versus using a template or a form provided by the funder. So David, I think I heard a sound. Can you say something before? Where does anybody? Yeah, I can hear you now. So finish chewing because I can see that, and then I'll come back and ask you that question in a sec. So if you think about the types of reports that funders require, as you can see on slide 23, the detail in these reports varies from not very much to a lot. So funders usually expect both a written and a financial report, and often they'll give you a report form or template. I have seen everything from super small, like one-page reports from templates from funders to like 10 pages long. So it's so varied, and it depends sometimes on the amount of your grant, but sometimes on the funder. So usually speaking, smaller projects require one report at the end, whereas you might have to submit multiple reports for bigger or longer projects. So David, I'm just wondering if you wanted to jump in, and what do you usually do? Do you usually write reports from a template provided by a funder, or do you create an outline for your reports?
I've done both, but of late, because I've been in this position only a year, Elder Active Whitehorse. Templates.
Yeah. And templates usually make it faster, right? So I don't like them as much, but they definitely make it faster because you're fitting your information into somebody else's format.
Which does make it easier, much easier.
Yeah, so sometimes it's also advantageous for yourselves in your own roles and organizations to create your own template so that if you're asked to provide a report that there's not a template for, you know how you're going to approach it and do it. So that might be an opportunity for those of you who don't typically create your own reports to do that for this week's RLA. So keep that in mind because I love having a template, especially for researchy type reports. I always forget to put in like my methodology or how I did something, and so having my own template that way is really helpful. Or do I put recommendations for last or conclusions last, like those sorts of things. So if you have it kind of laid out for yourself, it can be really helpful as well. On slide 24, I've given you some links there that some of these funders have similar reporting, like they're links to reporting requirements. So there's NWT On the Land Collaborative, the Youth Investment Fund, NWT Literacy Council, and also to RPAY. So those are some of the funders I'm just sort of sharing with you. And you can comment if you've had a chance to look at those, that's okay. But if you haven't, I'm just wondering if we can come up with a list of some of the common elements that either these funders on slide 24 or other funders from your experience tend to ask. So what? Here's my question, and we'll just go Peter, Ian, you can pop in the chat. So we'll go Peter back to David, and then the next time we'll go around. So what are some common elements that in your experience that either the funders listed on slide 24 or other funders expect in your reports? Peter, any ideas?
Duration of programming, number of participants, communities impacted, how funds were delegated, probably the other good one. Sorry, I don't want to take all the answers.
Okay. David, anything else? What are some common elements that you know that funders expect in reports?
Thanks for leaving me some room there, Peter, but I'm going to go the different direction. Successes and failures, challenges, what worked, what didn't work.
Yeah, that's true. Like, people like to know what worked, what did you do well, and that kind of comes, we started doing that, I want to say like 15, 20 years ago with funding, because when the term best practices became a little bit more common, a lot of funders were looking for best practices, and one of the ways that they looked for best practices was what worked. So when we used money, what worked? So Guyanne's also popped in. You guys can see that, you know, how the funds were used. So I think, Peter, you mentioned the allocation of funds. So there's two different things there. One is the budget. How did we plan to use the funds? And then the reporting is how did we actually use them? And sometimes just even that budget alone, like, you know, we plan to use, I'm going to use ERA's like example with walking. The first year you guys had $60,000 of funding for walking, and Alex couldn't hire anyone to do it. So it was like, we didn't spend $60,000 on personnel because we couldn't find anyone to do it. So that was a very different reporting scenario than what your past year would have been, right? Guillaume's got another point where the fund's enough for what you needed, right? So I don't think any of us ever say that the funds were too much, right? We usually say that it wasn't enough. Let's see. Somebody's got their hand up. Where does it say hand up? Peter, go for it, Peter.
So right now I'm doing that participation grant for Spike Ball, and we had our tentative budget that we used to get the approval for the grant. And I guess my question would be, like, how much wiggle room do you have within that sort of tentative budget that you've proposed versus like the actual budget?
Well, that depends on funders, right? So that's a really good question. So just to rephrase your question, when you submit a budget and you receive that funding that you asked for, and you said, like, I'm going to spend $2,500 on equipment and $2,500 on a barbecue, let's say, right? But what you end up doing is spending $4,000 on equipment and $1,000 on a barbecue, or you get money from somewhere else. Is that okay? And that should be described in your funding agreement. With a small amount of money, like $5,000, probably not a huge deal. But when you start to look at $50,000, $100,000, things like that, if you're significantly changing your budget and how you're going to use that money, you need to go back to the funder and get permission. So a general rule of thumb would be 10%. If things are changing by more than 10%, it's good to ask.
Okay.
Does that answer your question? Yeah, and
for sure.
Also,
I'm even running into that problem right now.
Yeah, and sometimes you need more money, but they're not willing to give you more money. So then, you know, you can report on how you used it, and then you got to find the other money somewhere else. So that's tough. Guyanne's also added in the chat that sometimes you get – oh, sorry, go ahead, David.
Yeah, okay. I like Guyanne's comment there because of COVID, some funds didn't get used. Do you get penalized the following year? Let's say you're in a 3 to 5 year program, whatever, and you didn't use all your funds. Because you didn't use all your funds, do they say, well, you don't need that much money, or do funders generally stick with the original agreed upon and say, okay, now you can use those spare funds for R&D or development of some sort?
It entirely depends on your contribution agreement or your transfer payment agreement. Even in a 5-year funding agreement like the Yukon Northern Wellness Program, you still, if you don't use all the funding for in one fiscal year, you have to give it back for the next fiscal. Funders don't like that. So it's way better to know 2 or 3 months before the end of the fiscal year where you're at and to ask for permission to change it with justification, and still do that. So, you know, one thing RPAE does is RPAE has, like, in budgets, a materials and swag sort of allocation. And if other money's not used and you get to March, it's a really easy way to spend money. So to try and find ways around that. COVID, as Deanne pointed out, was definitely presented unique circumstances. And in most cases, there were adjustments made to what the funders required to allow you to do things in different ways. And I've even heard, like in NWT, some of the revenue that was unspent was allowed to be deferred. So now some of the groups have like extra money and they got to come up with a plan of how to use it. So good point. So is there anything else that, coming back to my initial question there, can you think of any other common elements? So we've got successes, challenges, duration, impact, how you use the funds, how you plan to use the funds, number of participants. Any other common elements that you might include in a report? Okay, I'm going to ask, and I'm just sort of putting it out there because mostly it's David and Peter.
Everybody?
So, yeah, David and Peter, you guys can just jump in because Deanne's popping in the chat and it's just the three of us otherwise. So if you have something to add, just go ahead. I am going to ask you the question, but in a slightly different way, and let's see if we get something else. So what type of information is included in a good report? So you've said a number of things. You said, you know, a good report should present what you planned, like how, you know, your impact in communities, the duration of the project, how you use the funds, your successes, challenges. Is there any other information that should be included in a good report?
Like outcomes and output?
Yeah, so maybe what you anticipated. Yeah, so outcomes, outputs is really useful. Anything else that you can think of, David or Peter?
Demographics.
Mm-hmm. Good one.
Yeah, because somebody else might read your report, right? So a good report tells me what you plan to do. So it has an introduction. It might tell me who you plan to do it for. So some background information like demographics, your organization. It doesn't have to be long, but enough to provide a bit of context to that story. Because if you jump right into, we ran, and I'm just going to use the walking programs because we've been talking about those. We ran 40 walking programs and we had 142 unique participants and they were mostly in Whitehorse. Well, who is we? You know, who are the participants? So it's really useful to provide an introduction or some background information before you jump into this is what happened. I find that that's kind of like if you think of a good story, if all of a sudden you get into the, all the action part of the story and you're introduced to somebody called Matt and you have no idea who Matt is or where he came from, right, that the story doesn't make sense. So try and think of the flow and think of what your reader might need to lead them into what the body of the report actually is. Does that make sense?
I feel so bad. I feel so bad because I know that's not what I gave you. You know?
Yeah, but That's a little different. So that is a template that we were supposed to fill out a certain way. So that's a bit different.
I'm learning.
I think what I'm talking about is more of a bigger frame report. Like if, David, you're asked to, after 3 years of running walking programs, prepare a report for your board, what's it going to look like?
Right. Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or Peter, if right. because you've got the CPRA mentorship funding and you have to prepare a report on how that supported you and what changed in your world and how that's affected your career and stuff, like you got to create your own outline, right? They're not going to provide it for you.
Yeah.
So Guyanne's also got like the introduction, which we mentioned, but also photos for sure. Like we want to bring this to life somehow, right? Photos are awesome to include. Sometimes people want to see them at the end though, or just even one right at the beginning. And you've got like who were your participants, your goal, your budget, and a conclusion is good. So, you know, what did you learn from all of this? So what does it mean, right? What are some recommendations moving forward? So really important parts to a report. So keep this in mind for your RLA this week. So as you sort of noticed from our conversation so far, probably most of us end up using templates that are given to us for reporting. But as I said, there might be these times where you have to tell a story in a way that doesn't fit a template or there's no template for or it's a unique story or report. So just like that process of writing a good story, there's a process to writing a good report. So writing a good report begins, as explained on slide 25, with an outline, and it reflects the purpose of the report. So you might recall that, you know, we said if the purpose of your report is this, then you might write this type of report. And the report should also be tailored to the audience. So we want to keep that story coming across clearly. So I have another question for you, and I'm really curious to see what you think about this question. We'll let David go first. David, you also have your hand up. So what?
Okay. Before you ask the question, the reason I had my hand up is you mentioned methodology, and I'm looking at slide number 28. And number four where you're talking of body, and that's the methodology. And I'm used to doing scientific reports where you say, okay, I added 2 millimeters of this or that or whatever. How important is your information gathering methodology in general running reports needed? You know what I'm saying? Scientifically, I know how important it is because it's you have to be able to reproduce it. But in a activity report or a funding to a funder, how big a emphasis is on methodology?
Peter, I'm going to let you answer that because you got your thumbs up. How would you answer that to David?
Well, I actually know in the context more of sort of scientific literature, but methodology is like critically important because it doesn't matter what your results are, the way you collected it would have just been meaningless if it was just an arbitrary way. And like that's what happens in a lot of these studies. People will like make these big bold claims, and then you actually look at their methodology, you realize that their study was not using data correctly. They could have been fudging the numbers. They could have been very biased. Like if they're not doing like a double blind randomized controlled trial, it's like not a gold standard of study. That's like when the researchers as well as the participants are blinded to whatever variable that they're trying to manipulate. I don't know. And also random assignment to groups. There's a whole lot of things that go on in those, but I don't really know about funders as much, so I'll defer to you.
Yeah, and from a social sciences perspective, it's still important. So if you tell me, David, that 94% of your participants in your walking programs agree that the level of difficulty of the walking was excellent, right? I don't know if 94% of 10 people, 94% of 100 people, I think I asked you, I don't know if those 100 people that are answering it are, you know, above average fitness, if they walk regularly, or if there's somebody who's never walked before and now they're walking. I have no idea. So I need some context. So really, I think in social sciences, it's giving that context. How did we learn this information? did you set up a pre and a post thing, or did you just ask for feedback afterwards? And it doesn't have to be hardcore like with sciences, but there's still that context. And, you know, we often talk about 3 people showed up to the program. Well, in Whitehorse, maybe that's not so great, but in Burwash Landing, that might be absolutely amazing. So when you say, I'll give you another example. In around 2010, we got this healthy living funding, ARPE did, and we were told we had to do a promotional piece for single mothers under the age of 30. So single mothers under the age of 30 in the Yukon, and we had to spend $100,000 promoting healthy lifestyles to this population demographic. So I went into the stats, and there were, like, literally in rural Yukon, there were less than 100 people who fit that criteria, and they wanted us to spend that much money. So having that background information, knowing your demographic, knowing who you're using, can explain a little bit more what you've learned. So in a report, explaining how you got the information that was in a report, I know methodology is a big word, but just like introduction, explain the purpose of your project, but also how you gathered some information. Does that kind of make sense?
Yep. Yep. And I like Ian's comment there too, in terms of building trust.
Yeah, because if you just, you know, blindly tell your funders, yeah, I got like 87% or 94%, that number sounds great. But if you don't tell them where that number came from or how you got it, that's a bit of a challenge. So thanks, Ian. And thanks, David. Good question. So here's my next question. And this is something I'm going to look for in your RLAs this week. So what skills are essential for preparing good reports? What do you, as a report preparer, writer, presenter, what skills do you need to have? So what is essential? Peter, you want to start off?
Being meticulous to detail, I would say.
Okay, being meticulous. David?
I was going to say proper use of the English language. I took the Evelyn Woods bad writing course, and I can write real good.
Yeah, Deanne's got, you know, good at using Excel, marketing skills, being analytical, absolutely, and language is so important. What did I read? I better not tell you what I read because you guys will all know where it came from. But I read somebody's strategic plan the other day, and it said we have 3 goals as follows, and there were 4 goals. And I was just like, really? You can't double check that before you put it on your website that that's what you have, or spelling mistakes or grammar mistakes, or, you know, not providing a good introduction, like all those things. It's like if you were to read a book and you're in a really exciting part and you turn the page and there's a blank page in there because they printed it wrong, right? Or a page is missing and you go to the next page and it's like, this doesn't belong here. So definitely, like, sort of being meticulous, being thorough, using language professional language, not verbiage. How about things like acronyms? What's the practice with acronyms?
You disclose the acronym on the very first time you see it, and then you can use it thereafter.
Yeah. And that goes with what I was thinking, flow. In other words, you may have your executive summary and then your conclusion, you know, lay out that way. That's the flow that reports follow. So, of course, you're not going to start with your methodology and your stats and then go into an executive summary. And, you know, you have to have flow, logical flow.
Yeah, for sure. So it has to be readable, right? I think the other pet peeve I have is it needs to be in plain language. So we have all sorts of people with all sorts of different literacy levels across the North, and I don't know if you guys have ever read like an email from somebody that's long and convoluted. It's so easy to misunderstand it. So plain language, I think, is really important as well. Anything else, Peter?
Yesterday, I read this article that was on sort of the Whitehorse Star or the Yukon Daily News. Sorry, Whitehorse Daily News. Daily Star. Whitehorse Daily Star is what it's called. And it was about how the U14 volleyball boys, they like got gold at the down in the DC Provincials, which is actually really cool. But I was reading through the article, and at one point they were talking about this one kid had gotten 11 serves in a row, and it was 16-24 for the opposing team, and he served 11 serves in a row and won them the set. But then they like say like the question was asked, does he have ice in his veins? And it's just like a weird like joke to be throwing into like an article. When I was like, wow, I was so proud of it. And I was reading this, and then I realized that Mr. Bingham had sent in the article. So I think he was doing like a cheeky joke for the players, but it just kind of threw me off guard because you're reading almost like a report. I thought it was from like an actual reporter, and it just looked really weird the first time I saw it.
Yeah, no kidding. That's really odd. And newspapers, especially our local newspapers, sometimes aren't so great at getting things clear, right, and stuff. So it's really important to be clear and present things in a way that your audience is going to be able to read and understand. And inside jokes probably aren't a good place to report.
That's the difference between a report and an editorial. An editorial gives you the flexibility to give your opinion and make left turns, where a report is supposed to be simply the facts.
And you can tell so much bias in those editorials. Like, you just, like, this person clearly has a specific viewpoint and they're not really they're just saying what they think. They're trying to wrap it in a way that, like, supports their opinion.
Anyway, for sure. So for good, I guess some of the skills then coming back to that, so we've talked about writing, plain language. We want to make sure that the purpose is clear. Like I have read reports before. I did some work for Community Development Fund looking at their application process and their reporting process. And goodness, some of the convoluted, long-winded pieces that people wrote. And you're like, you didn't even answer the question. Like 500 words and you didn't answer the question that you could have answered in less than 100 words. So we need to be very concise too. Like writing concisely and clearly is a huge skill. So if you don't have that skill, really important to go and ask somebody who does to help you with it or to review it or something like that. I think another thing that's a skill, go ahead, Peter.
Well, I was just thinking about that thing about objectivity. Like, is that really important? Or you're almost, like, trying to convince the funder that this was a good project. You know, like, how important is that? Like, you kind of want to walk the line of, like, promoting your report, but also being objective, right?
Yeah, I think I'd use the word genuine. Because if you genuinely believe it was a good project and it was effective, then put that stance forward. But I have written reports where this didn't work. And it's okay to say that, too. It's like, thanks for the funding. We tried this, this, and this, but this didn't work for us. We had to write some, RPA used to have these action grants in schools. And I ended up having to report that it wasn't working. Like, it wasn't making a difference. It was using way too much administrative and staff time. So a lot of the grants were going towards paying the cost for somebody to do this program. So, you know, it's okay to say, that's where David pointed out successes and challenges. It's okay to say that you've had challenges. And, you know, as an organization, you shouldn't use money for the same purpose if it's not working.
And as funders, you wouldn't be revoking money because they weren't successful with it, ideally.
No. No. Once that agreement's in place, the only time they might do it is if you actually didn't do what you said you were going to do and you didn't do anything. So that could be a little different. So if you said you're going to do something and you do it and it doesn't work, explain why it doesn't work and be honest about it.
I guess it's on them too, because you're the one that pitched the idea in the first place and they had to approve it. So
yeah,
if it doesn't work, then we both kind of dropped It just didn't work out.
Yeah, like that promotional piece I just talked about where we were supposed to target single mothers across in rural Yukon, we ended up targeting women. It was a $100,000+ campaign. They wanted RK to do it, and all the marketing stuff, we got all these reports of post offices where all the stuff was in the junk mail. And so we reported on that.
And that's the key right there, is identifying failure. By identifying what didn't work, then your funder can say to the next applicant, well, we tried that. Can you think of a different methodology? Or this has been our experience. This method works. So, I think, I think statements of failure are just as important as statements of success. And we're only human.
And learning from what you've done or haven't done, right? So learning from that and not making the same mistake again, I think, is a big thing, right? So the one other skill I was going to point out that to me is really important is bullets and lists. So bullets and lists can really help you capture information, but they can also be way overused. So you want to use them in a way to emphasize or accentuate things, but not overuse them so somebody feels like they're just being bombarded by little short phrases the whole way through a report. So there's a certain skill to how you would write or compose or use things like acronyms, bullets, language, numbers, charts, graphs, photos.
I was told once that you shouldn't have more than 5 bullets under any single heading. So you may have say you have 5 subheadings, but each one of those headings or subheadings only have a maximum of 5 bullets. Otherwise, your reader becomes brain dead.
Yeah. That's great. Thanks. I guess those are sort of some of the skills that are important as far as preparing reports. There's one thing that I forgot to mention, going back to the question about what's included in a good report, and that's if you look at slide 31, if you have them open, a good report acknowledges your funders, your community partners, your stakeholders, your participants, and sometimes your staff. So make sure that you give kudos or acknowledgements where they're due in reports. So, David, if you're asked to write a report after 3 years of running walking programs, you might acknowledge the funders, you might acknowledge the people who've come, but probably your leaders and just maybe like stuff like that or other people that have helped support it, like UConn Anti-Poverty Coalition. So keep in mind to acknowledge.
Question there. If, for example, I'm putting this in to UConn Northern Wellness, right, do I still, they know it's their report, they know it's their template, do I still have to say, and I acknowledge UConn Northern Wellness, or is that?
No, at the end of the UConn Northern, at the end of the UConn Northern Wellness, there's 5 open-ended questions, and one of them is about, what's worked for you or what do you appreciate or what support, and we always add something in like we greatly appreciate the support because it's helped us do all of this wonderful work. Or even when I send the report in, thank you so much, you've allowed us to do all of this stuff. So, but if you look at the video that RK made, the recreation effect, there's a funder's acknowledgement at the end of that. That in a sense is a type of report. It serves several purposes, but. Okay, I do have one last question for you guys then. So we've talked about skills. I missed slides 26 and 27. Where did they go? Just the suggestion, like as shown on slides 26 and 27, the tools that you use for planning your project, like your logic model, work plan, and budget, can also help guide those major sections of your reports. So, for example, when you have used a logic model, this is slide 27, how will the program or project achieve the intended outcome? Then your report should report on what those were. So your logic model that was a part of your proposal to get money said, we're going to do this. So your reporting should include that. If you're talking about what it will cost and you've done a budget, your reporting should explain how much it did cost. And if you've said how the activities will be carried out, as David pointed out, you want to say what was successful or challenging as far as those activities. So just keep in mind that you should go back to what you've submitted for funding or what it's been agreed that you'll do and make sure that in any agreements or anything like that, if you are creating your own report template, that it captures, you go back to what you said and you reflect, we said we'd do this, this is what happened. So a good report also ties that together, the planning, what actually happened, and the results. So think of it as a sandwich, like your entire recreation programming process is a sandwich between the planning phase and the reporting phase. So we did BF 102, which was proposal writing. That comes at the beginning, piece of bread here, all the stuff that goes on in between, and then at the end we have our reporting, so we're sandwiching it, we're wrapping it up. So hopefully that kind of makes sense in a bigger picture perspective. Slides 28 and 29, I think we've covered some of these. There's some tips in there for structuring your reports. And keep in mind that the contents of a report might be short or long. It absolutely depends on the purpose of your report, the scope of your report, the audience, the length of the project or program, cost, complexity, all of those things. So, you know, sometimes you have a 50-page report, which is, like, absolutely terrible. But, sometimes you have a 3-page report. So it varies. And just keep that in mind, I think. Big reports might be things like repairs that are needed to community recreation facilities, and those might be 50-plus pages long with studies and addendums and financial forecasts and things. Whereas a walking program, David, if your board asks you to report on it once a year, 2-3 pages maybe, like not anywhere near as long, plus a financial report at the end. So pretty much all reports always require a financial section. And again, comparing what it was that you budgeted to, and I think we've talked about that. So my last question for you guys is, if you think of what we've kind of gone through in our advanced learning events, we've gone through some risk management things that are about how you're doing things, promoting recreation, we've done proposal writing, we've done volunteers, we've done evaluation, and now we're at reporting. And the one that I think sometimes creates some confusion is evaluation and reporting. So I just wanted to ask you your own perspective. There's no right or wrong answer here, but I wanted to ask you what you think about as far as reporting and evaluation and how they're similar and how they're different. So any thoughts on how reporting and evaluation are similar or different? David and Peter's thinking. David's chewing, so over to you, Peter.
I feel like they're similar in the sense that you can kind of kill two birds with one stone, kind of. Like, you can kind of put them together when you're sort of in terms of generating data. But obviously, they are two distinct things. It's just that you can kind of mash them together when you're doing evaluation and reporting. But they are different in the fact that evaluation is a lot more involved, and you're like looking at every single moving piece and sort of breaking it down into its concepts and why you even have it in the first place. Whereas reporting, you don't necessarily do that.
Okay, so evaluation is something bigger than reporting.
I don't know if it's bigger, but it's more like evaluation would be like more breaking down each component of the program that you're doing and seeing if it there's value there if it's logical, whereas reporting is more just seeing the, I would say, like, the outcomes or the outputs of the program.
Yeah, an evaluation can be very specific, though, too. You could dig into one part of your program, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. So it doesn't. It might be really big, but it also might be specific.
Yeah.
David, want to give it a shot? How do you see reporting and evaluation, the similarities and differences?
40, can you hear me? Testing, 1, 2, 3. Yeah, change network. Okay. pardon me. Report is simply the facts, you know, which we've been talking about. Evaluation can be, was it worth the effort? It gives the more human side of the benefits of the program, the cost benefits. So while you can use the program report as this is the data, raw data element, the evaluation report says, is it worthwhile to do again? Outside of a simple numbers game, it allows more of a human element.
Yeah, so remember that we do evaluation for different purposes. So evaluation is not just summative, right? Whereas to me, reporting tends to be a summation of something. It comes at the end of something. It is telling the story of what happened. Whereas evaluation, we might use evaluation to look at even if we should be doing something. So we can use evaluation for many different purposes. Evaluation might also be developmental. You know, how's it working with what we're doing? Do we need to change what we're doing? So in my mind, evaluation is a bigger process. Go ahead, Peter.
I was just going to say, what an easy way of putting that be like, reporting is sort of showcasing effectiveness, where evaluation is just like gauging how effective it truly is, kind of. I don't know.
Yeah. And like Jan just posted, like a reporting is a kind of a conclusion. It's drawing things to an end. It's explaining what happened. Whereas evaluation is more finding out, like evaluation can be used to conclude something. You can evaluate something while you're doing it and write a report about it, as in summative evaluation. But evaluation can be also to uncover things and dig into things that you might not know about. And it could happen at different times, and it could be bigger, it could be small. So I think to me, reporting is a much more straightforward process. Evaluation is a bigger process, a tool that should be woven through everything. Well, it shouldn't be woven through everything we do, but it can influence what we do, right? We can use evaluation at the beginning of something. It doesn't have to be at the end of something. And reporting is part of evaluation, because usually when you do an evaluation, you write an evaluation report. So, So I see that they're quite distinct, and sometimes people blend them together. So try and think of the evaluation process as uncovering, learning, finding, seeing things in a new way. Reporting is sharing what you've learned with, or what's happened with somebody who needs to know that information. Does that kind of make sense?
My question is that when you talked about how that, so we had like the Arte 30th anniversary video, and you said that was sort of like an evaluation. But at the same time, I feel like it's almost like a reporting, because it's like you're showcasing the services and the impact they have. So that's why I'm kind of confused about that a little bit. But
So we used it used evaluation funding, because that's where the money was. And it does, in a way, evaluate, because it tells the story of the benefits. And if you remember, the benefits of recreation are the outcomes or the positive impacts that we see through community recreation. So sharing that story, like we didn't know what we were going to hear when we set out to find out what the benefits were. But if you go back and look at that movie, you can see how people talked about overcoming social isolation, bringing people together, setting people on a path for an active, healthy lifestyle. Like, So that's the evaluative component. The reporting component is kind of like ARPAE has a Real Leader program, ARPAE has a Waffle Lending Library program. These are the impacts of those programs. So that's kind of how I see it a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
This is on topic but off a topic, based on yesterday's news. The evaluated report would have said that Donald Trump is a sex offender, where the program report was the conclusion that the court made.
I see.
I didn't watch the news yesterday, so okay. Thanks, David.
Basically, a woman that was had accused him of sexually assaulting her won her court case. That was very promising.
Yeah, so the evaluation was, what's his behavior like? And the conclusion, or the final report, was, yep. So, and the Americans still want him to run for president.
Okay, we better not get into politics, because we won't end our call on time. So, I think it's really worthwhile for you guys moving forward. Like, Ian, you'll be in some of the advanced learning events in the fall, but for David and Peter, take the time to reflect on what you've learned and what you've gained. And there is, each of the learning events that we do come from a different competency background. So there's a reason why BF 103 is a BF learning event. Reporting, it's linked to proposal writing, it's linked to basic finances. There's an accountability piece behind our BF ones, whereas the RP ones, which is evaluation and plan for success, are a bit of a broader picture and process of making things work, figuring out how to get the benefits into the benefits of recreation into more of what we do, things like that. So, think about that as you move forward. Peter,
Will I still have access to the stuff after you've reset it all? Like, will I have access to all the resources?
No, if you want to have access to anything, just go ahead and download it before, it'll be sometime over the summer that I archive it.
Okay, yeah, so just like the PowerPoints and stuff are really useful. They kind of have like the filled information.
I'm trying to find the URL that you sent us. Index of resources, got it. Okay.
Well, just let me give you a, where is it? Let me just give you a URL in the chat here where you can find all of the presentation ones. This might be a little easier for you guys to use.
I just know that like when I graduated school, I had all these courses that I really liked, and I didn't download any of the PowerPoints or the learning. Like, even like the course outlines are important, because when you're like applying for jobs or if you have like CECs, it's like, oh, this is what I actually learned in these courses. It's like useful to have.
If you click link, it will give you actually more than what there is, but you can find some of the things there. And the reason why there's more is some of the government in Nunavut's translated some of them, so some of them are in French and in Nuktitukan and in Inuktitut. So that should give you a little bit of a starting point. If you look at it by last modified, then you'll get the most recent one. So. Awesome. So this wraps up our final call for BF 103. You do have an RLA due on Sunday, and there was one due last Sunday for those who haven't tackled it yet. David and Peter, oh no, yeah.
I haven't done it. I have like the reporting for the, I'm doing it right now. It's like it's going to be a report for the event that Alicia and Jana are hosting. To the participants of this leadership workshop.
So, awesome.
Good. I just need to get together.
Great. So the RLA for this week then is to prepare a report outline. So you can choose a project to report on. It can be a current or a past project. It can be what you presented as your proposal in BF 102. If it's something specific, find out what to include in the report or imagine one. So David, imagine that in 3 years, after 3 years of walking programs, your board wants a report on the walking program. and you could create an outline for that, and that might be useful to you down the road. Peter, you know, like youth leadership, the work that Jana and Alicia are doing is really important. So how are you going to report on it? How are you going to justify it? Like, you could create a report outline for that too. You could check it out with them too as well, because really they should be the ones preparing the report afterwards. So wouldn't it be great to get a really useful report that we can partake in going forward?
I'm going to participate in it as well. Yeah.
But if they're running it, then they could report. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see, because they're doing like a lot of the moving pieces of like the actual content and stuff.
Well, they're getting a contract, so usually their contract means that they need to report on what the money they received and how it was spent. So,
sure.
But you could create the template for them. You could create the report outline. That would be super helpful.
Yeah,
so,
great.
Yeah. So, and Gian, whatever works for you. So. Just, it doesn't have to be, I'm asking for an outline, I'm not asking for the report. So I don't want to see the written report. What I've asked people to do is make sure that you have the sections that you would include. So you can have on the front page, title page, tell me what you would include on that page. If your table of contents comes next, have a table of contents. And then just give me a blank page for each different section. So if you're going to have an introduction, put a blank page introduction, I would include stuff like this in here. If you're going to have a methodology or how this report was created or how we gather the information, that might be a section under the introduction. It's up to you. So create an outline. Remember that there's a financial aspect to those reports too. So create an outline that works for you for the project, program, or event that you want to hypothetically or realistically report on, but don't write the report. So it's kind of like an outline or a template. You're creating the template almost. Does that make sense? Awesome. Well, thanks, everybody. I'm going to stop the conference call recording. Let me know if you have any questions.